Catholic commentary. Spiritual warfare. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Jesus 911.
Soul Patrol, Jesus 911, Spiritual Warfare. My name is Jesse Romero. I am the Latin lover of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, the Latin lover of Our Lady. And I got two partners here. We got a three-man card today. I got Dr. Dan Schneider. I got Mark Cavalier. We're going to be talking about all things pro-life. This is the issue right here where I believe that the devil has fully inserted himself in this battle. And we got a spiritual warrior from New Mexico who's going to tell us about how he's been battling against the diabolical in New Mexico and some of the things that he used. But before we go to Mark and Dan Schneider, I have a short clip. I'd like to see if the engineer can play the short clip.
Exactly 1 year ago today, we were all out here on the sidewalk praying for an end to the abortion facility here in Las Cruces.
September 2014 that we learned that there was an abortion facility opening right here in Las Cruces, New Mexico, which is the city of the crosses. New Mexico is considered the late-term abortion capital of the country. The community responded immediately with our first 40 Days for Life campaign.
I knew from my experience in El Paso that a sidewalk presence was necessary.
This facility is operating full-time, fully staffed, fully funded to harm the women and the children of our community. How could we as a church only respond part-time?
He looked at what was working well in other locations across the country.
Going to these other Coalition for Life offices, learning from Sidewalk Advocates for Life, learning what works, what does not work, why doesn't it work, how can we tweak that so that it works here in Las Cruces, especially the Coalition for Life in St. Louis. We were really inspired by the video produced by Sidewalk Advocates for Life on the St. Louis method. So we started testing that out and we started seeing results. We started having people stop. We started having saves. We started having people redirected to our local pregnancy center.
Many of the people that became Sidewalk Advocates also did 40 Days for Life. You know, it was almost like one group.
He took an integrated approach and pulled the community together.
Had an advocate on the sidewalk, and it was kind of funny because they actually called me and said, I've been out here, you know, praying for an hour, and I just noticed that there's signs down.
All their signs were gone, and it just was such an overwhelming feeling.
To be honest, at first we weren't even excited, we were suspicious. It was like, what are they up to? What are they doing? Are they going somewhere else? Are they changing ownership? What's going on?
He found out that their business had been affected by 10 to 15%. That's all it takes to shut down an abortion facility.
In spite of ourselves, in spite of the difficulties, in spite of the frustrations and the challenges, in spite of the fact that this is the late-term abortion capital of the country, and then in spite of the fact that there's no laws here, you know, to help us that are on our side,
and all those hours standing out there in the wind and the rain and the heat and the cold, it didn't matter. It was all so worth it.
It was almost incomprehensible, the feeling. We saw God, in spite of all of those challenges, answer those prayers.
God worked a miracle. It was all God. It was praise God.
The message, I believe, out of Las Cruces is that you can do this.
It can be done anywhere. We've got programs in place that are effective and they work and they're proven.
For those that really want a more systematic approach, here it is.
You don't have to take away 100% of their business. It can be as simple as taking away 10%.
Many times, just being out there in front of that abortion facility, their numbers go down.
Every time a woman chooses not to go there and go to one of these life-affirming facilities, it cuts their bottom line and they will close their doors.
I realized that I had been putting too much emphasis on asking Caesar to help my neighbor for me. And that's not what we're called to do. We're called to get out and help our neighbor. And that's what Sidewalk Advocates for Life and 40 Days for Life helped us to do in Las Cruces.
If you're thinking about becoming a sidewalk advocate and you're not sure, you think that's something that you cannot do, that's what happened to me. I didn't think I could do it and I did it. And it was so rewarding.
God is on our side and we are being His hands and feet. And that's what He has called us to be. So when you bring all these Christ-oriented, like-minded groups together, how can you go wrong?
Wow. Dan, you're the one that introduced me to Mark. You guys are blessed to have, well, both you guys out in New Mexico, both you guys are just very serious Catholics. But we've got Mark Cavalier right now, and that's the way you pronounce his name, Cavalier. He's the founder and executive director of the Southwest Coalition for Life. It started in 2015. And this young man, by the grace of God, and obviously by God's power, he's been able to close down, him and his team and the people that are committed out there, have been able to close down three local abortion centers in just over 3 years. That is amazing. Mark, what did you do, or what do you do for a living, or what were you doing for a living before you got involved in this? Or is this something you do part-time or full-time? Tell us a little bit about your evolution into Southwest Coalition for Life.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and thank you, Dan. It's good to be with you again on this. I had just been working an IT job. I was kind of a jack of all trades. I'd done training, all kinds of stuff. Was working, on a computer for a credit union for a couple of years. But on the side, I had been very involved and in just kind of with a tunnel vision, almost obsession, focused, militantly so on the two-party political approach to seeing an end to abortion and for, generally all the things that are important to us in our faith. I see, like many of us do, all the problems in the laws and the politics that counter our faith and need to be fixed and just cause so many problems. And so I kind of jumped in, 100% that, if that's the problem, if abortion is legal, then that's the only avenue for the solution. And so for about 10 years, right out of high school, I was just very, very caught up in that system. But I was getting very frustrated because especially in our state of New Mexico, which is considered the late term abortion capital of the nation, there's no laws at all restricting abortion. It's legal up to the day of birth for any reason. No parental consent laws for minors under 18. State tax dollars as a New Mexican go to abortion facilities. Some people call it the Wild West of abortion in the state of New Mexico. And so especially in this state, it was like banging my head against a wall with all my prayers and my efforts and my time and my expenses that I was putting into trying to make some traction on this issue. And not seeing any fruit for it. And every once in a while, we'd have a little win, and then it would just seem like there were broken promises or, some political, this felt stabbed in the back over something. And I kind of just was like frustrated, just walked away from it, just like, it's not getting anywhere. It's not worth the time and effort, and almost at the brink of despair. And little had I known, in hindsight, I just learned recently, my wife actually felt the call into pro-life ministry before I did. And she had brought it up to me at one point, and I just kind of was like dismissed as like, yeah, that's a nice idea, but let's actually do something here that works. And I had just had such tunnel vision. So she just started praying a bunch of novenas for me, and she actually prayed me out of that. And that's what got me, kind of opened my eyes a little bit that, wait a minute, this isn't working. This isn't, I'm not getting the fruit for my efforts here. And then right about that time was when we learned in September 2014 that this abortion center was opening in our local town of Las Cruces, New Mexico. Las Cruces, of course, means the crosses, the city of the crosses. While New Mexico is this late-term abortion capital of the nation, all those abortion facilities are clustered up in the northern part of the state around Albuquerque and Santa Fe. So I had never really addressed it directly in my hometown, and now suddenly this is coming into our community, and I realized, okay, like now it's time for me to put my money where my mouth is. And I had been a keyboard warrior, and I debated the issue a lot, and I had done this and that, and I'd go in every couple of years and I'd vote really hard, and okay, well, that's all as much as I can do, and we'll come back and try again next time. But now it's like now women, that we knew, women from our churches, were going in for abortion right here. I knew that I couldn't just sit on the sidelines and do nothing. I didn't know what to do. But Martha Beasley, who you saw in that video, and some others said that they were doing this thing called 40 Days for Life. And I for 10 years, like I said, I had just seen this as a ballot measure, a legislative effort. I had no awareness of the pro-life movement, praying on the sidewalk and pregnancy centers and things like that. So I went to this meeting to do 40 Days for Life in Las Cruces. And I saw the founder, David B. Wright, on the training video, who I'm blessed to call a very dear and close friend of mine now. And, you know, he opened my eyes to this fact that, you know, abortions aren't happening in the White House or the state Capitol buildings or the halls of Congress. They're happening just minutes away from where we work and where we live and worship. And, you know, just 50 feet behind our local pizzeria in Las Cruces, that's where they're happening. And so that's where I needed to be, you know, and so we went out to the sidewalk, and I saw that through these efforts, abortion centers are closing, babies were being saved, abortion workers are converting. Now, you know, over 14,000 known babies saved, 107 now abortion facilities closed through these peaceful prayer vigils. And what really blew my mind too is when I learned that of all these abortion facilities that have been closing through, you know, these prayer vigils and praying out in front of abortion facilities, the state that actually has the highest number of abortion facility closures through these prayer vigil efforts is the state of California, one of the most abortion-friendly states in the nation. But when the church shows up, and especially in that state too, they knew they couldn't count on their state to come and help their neighbor for them. So people go out and say, we're going to have to do it ourselves. And the enemy, these abortion, you know, these abortion centers, they're not ready for that. They know how to work around the political stuff, and they know they've got a lot of the legislators in their pockets. They know that system, but they can't battle and count against prayer and
penance.
And yeah, so I went all in after that. And
Mark, let me jump in there. I hear the music. We got Mark Cavalier. He's from Southwest Coalition for Life, and we're talking about his efforts in New Mexico in the pro-life movement. I want to get Dan's take how they met. These two warriors for Christ out of New Mexico. Mexico's got some good men out there. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, Jess Romero. I've got Dr. Dan Schneider, Mark Cavalier. I've just been talking to Mark and looking at some videos of this young man from the Southwest Coalition for Life out there in El Paso, Texas, and Las Cruces, New Mexico. That's where he operates. And he's doing a mighty work. He's a sword in the hands of God. Dan, how did you meet Mark? How did you guys cross paths?
Yeah, I had just heard about this organization that was going to be protesting and prayerful protesting and doing, prayerful resistance in front of an abortion clinic. So I just signed up. My wife and I signed up for an hour, you know, throughout the week, and a couple hours we signed up, and I just ran into Mark there, this was before he had gone into this ministry full time, but I recognized immediately as a soldier, a true warrior in Christ, you know. Who was not just had a warrior's heart, but also very skilled strategically and tactically, you know. In any battle, you've got strategy and you've got tactics. Strategy is the overarching panoramic view of the objectives, but tactics are specifically the hands-on practical application, how we can defeat the enemy. And so Mark has a good blending of both. There's a lot of good tacticians out there. There's a lot of good strategists out there. But Mark is one of those blessed individuals that does both of them very well. And we've seen the positive fruits of it. Three clinics here in the region closed down the last couple of years. It's just been fantastic. So that's where I got to meet Mark. And not only is he good at what he does, he's a very prayerful, holy man, prayerful man, a good Catholic. So just have been a blessing for me to know him, work with him.
Dan, you and me were talking about Mark yesterday after I watched a few videos. And Mark, here's the metaphor I've got of you, Mark. I'm thinking of that movie... the movie 300, and you got the Persian messenger that comes up to King Leonidas, and he has a bunch of skulls of a bunch of dead kings, and he comes over here and basically says, you know what, man, I'm here giving a message from Xerxes, the king of Persia. You got to give up your kingdom, Leonidas. And I mean, you talk about hundreds of thousands of Persian soldiers versus 300, and King Leonidas just kind of looks, turns his back, and it looks at his wife. His wife gives him the nod, and he turns around, kind of like your wife gave you the nod. He turns around and tells the messenger, you know what, we Spartans, we're not going to give it to you Persians. And he gives him a front kick. it was the front kick from hell. I mean, this would have made Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee, you know, basically covet that front kick. That was the most. My name is Jesse Romero. We had some technical difficulties. The internet was down. And it's interesting. All of a sudden, we all started praying. Dan Schneider started praying. Mark started praying. Myself. And all of a sudden, the internet is back up. Not surprising. We're talking to Mark Cavalier. Yes, and his name is pronounced just like the Chevy Cavalier, correct? He's the founder and the executive director of the Southwest Coalition for Life. He's based out of Las Cruces, New Mexico. And he's a former employee or businessman in the tech world. He was a tech guy, but he felt God called him to the pro-life movement. And what's interesting about this young man is that as a result of embracing the church's teachings on the gospel of life, he's been able to close down 3 abortion clinics in 40 months. So he stands to me as an inspiration for every single man across the country. He did give us some good news as well. He said that the state that has more abortion clinics closing is the state of California. That is good news. That means that there's a lot of pro-life warriors in California. The fact that Mark would give us that news, and I'll ask him again when he comes back on. But as we're waiting for Mark and Dan Schneider, I just want to mention an old Catholic tradition about the 3 Hail Marys for spiritual purity. You know, St. Paul tells us that for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty to God unto the pulling down of fortifications. Dan, can you hear me?
Dan, it again. How about you? You hear me?
I can hear you. And it's funny, here we start talking about the devil's sacrament, abortion, and all of a sudden, the internet goes down in over in California, where we got the Virgin Most Powerful's headquarters. Every single time there's a hot topic like this, the devil, he gets involved in the technology, and he takes it down. But I know you started praying, because I read your text. I was praying as well over here, and all of a sudden, as I finished my last prayer to Our Lady, the engineer says, hey, we're back up. Internet came back up. And so, thank you, Blessed Virgin. Thank you, Mother Mary. We got Mark back.
This is the thing.
I'm back, yes.
Go ahead, Dan.
This is the thing. This is really a testimony, Jesse, to the battle we're up against. And the enemy is going to use all these little tactics. We have to pray continually. Whenever we do any sort of apostolic work, we have to take everything to the Lord. We have to constantly be praying. This is one of the things that I noticed with Mark. Everything that he does, everything that he's done to help save babies and to save souls is done in a prayerful way. And that's the only way we're going to win on the battlefield.
That's right. Mark, glad to have you back. Just want to ask you again, tell us about some of the strategies. This is incredible that you've closed down 3 abortion clinics by the grace of God and your leadership, because it's your leadership. What can you tell us about strategies that you've used?
So I think to emphasize the point that I was getting ready to make, we got cut off there right as during that nice introduction you were saying, because the number one thing that I always tell people was something that was recommended to me early on, which I think is the absolute most important thing for any pro-life effort, which is praying the litany of humility. Because in pro-life work, temptation of pride is always the gateway to our downfall. Typically people who go out and pray on the sidewalk and, you know, are involved in pro-life efforts, you know, typically have the 7 deadly sins in check for the most part. So pride is always the chief sin that, a lot of good efforts can eventually get to us, because it's a very noble cause. So there's 2 temptations to pride in pro-life work. On one hand, you have the people who pat you on the back and say, hey, you're a warrior for the unborn. And, you know, you're like the guy from 300 and, you know, you're out saving babies and all this amazing stuff, which is much appreciated. But then on the other hand, you also have temptations of pride that come from the world. Your pride wants to protect your ego from the humiliation and the persecution from the world that says, oh, you know, get a job, do something better with your time. You're, you know, and so the litany of humility addresses both of that. And, you know, if you've never prayed it, I recommend everybody look it up. It addresses both of that by saying, you know, first of all, you know, deliver us from the desire of being loved and the desire of being honored and praised and esteemed. And it's not saying that being praised and loved and honored are bad, but what is our desire? Our desire is so that the moms and babies will be loved and honored and recognized and esteemed, not us. And so as soon as we make pro-life work about our organizations and our efforts and our prayer vigils and our marches and our, that's our downfall. And so we have a very intentionally from the beginning, I train all of our team and all of our people that, you know, and it surprises people at first when I say this, but we're not in the business of saving babies. And people are like, well, what do you even do then? We are in the business of empowering moms who, because when a mom chooses life in the face of this overwhelming culture of death that has been forming her conscience since she was knee high, and this billion-dollar abortion industry that is spending tons of money and pulling every trick in the book to prey upon her fears to get her to choose an abortion, and she chooses life in spite of that, in the face of that, she is the hero in that story. And we need to realize that and not take that away from her. So I don't take any credit. I've never saved a baby. We've never closed an abortion center. This is all because of the moms that we, if anything, we're just the sidekicks that reach out to empower her with the resources that she needs and the support that she needs so that she can save her baby from this predatory abortion industry. And that's what closes these abortion centers, because they're just in it for profit, financial profit. And so when we get strategic and realize that and say, okay, yes, we want to save mom, we want to help moms, we want to save babies. But if we really want to shut down an abortion clinic, we need to hit them at their bottom line. And so how can we maximize turning every dollar away that goes into there? So whether someone's going there for abortion or they're going there for birth control or an STI test or something, every dollar that we can get to turn away is $1 closer to them shutting their doors permanently. And so that's the overarching idea behind our strategy is to hit them in the, and that's essentially what happened in Las Cruces. When they closed there, their hotline said, oh yeah, we had to close our Las Cruces branch because they were having financial trouble, because all of a sudden they weren't getting enough patients. And it's because for the last 8 months, we had been out there with this strategy. I can talk about more if you want, which is really based heavily on a lot of marketing and persuasion to persuade women to leave so that, you know, they're suddenly, I mean, and even if you can get 30%, 10, 20, 30% of the women to leave, any business that from 1 month to the next loses 30% of their business, if anyone listening in business knows that you're not going to be able to stay in business for very long. And so it's kind of just going after them with a little bit of old fashioned capitalism and saying, hey, if we want to compete with a culture of life versus a culture of death, right? Let's actually compete. We're more than ready for all the politicians and the legislators and the laws to come and join us and be on our side. But I'm not holding my breath in the meantime. So we got to work in the culture and the conditions and the environment that we are currently in to shut these places down in spite of that in the meantime.
How important is spiritual warfare in combating abortion? Because you've told me you've seen that this is beyond political. You were caught up in the political, you said, for years, but you said this is beyond political. There's a spiritual dimension to it. Do you see that very clearly now? And do you basically, do you see the hands of the diabolical in this industry?
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely. And that has to be the foundation. And it's interesting because it's kind of like Dan was talking about, it's kind of melding the two. Like, you have to have the prayerful spiritual, and then you also have to figure out strategically, how do we work in this secular culture of consumerism to be able to get them to give us the time of day to listen to us without coming across as crazy religious people that they're just going to drive past and just dismiss us. And so you have to have very consciously have both of these. So first and foremost, like I said, we always start everything with a litany of humility, making sure we know that it's not about us. And then the prayer vigil on the sidewalk, and yeah, there's a lot of spiritual demonic stuff going on too, which it looks like we're coming up to a break. But
yeah, we're coming up to a break. We got Mark Cavalier from, he's executive director from Southwest Coalition for Life. We got Dan Schneider, myself, Jess Romero. We'll be right back. Talk down abortion clinics. Stick around.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888 526-2151.
Jesus 911, we're here with Mark Cavalier from Executive Director from Southwest Coalition for Life. Mark, have you learned some things from Dan Schneider? I've known Dan for years, and Dan is very deep in spiritual warfare, deep in theology. Has he given you some tips that you've used in this apostolic work of yours?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember one of our first rallies we had Dan speak, and he came out to kind of give us the shot in the arm to keep us going after we'd been out there praying and fasting for quite a while and hadn't seen any, much progress. And sometimes we start doubting, are we even making a difference out here? And he really reminded us that, to keep going and be persistent in this and just know that, God has this, and God is gonna see this through to the end in spite of us. He doesn't necessarily need us, but he's called us. God can do this with anybody. And so he's really, especially getting, like I said, more of the men involved that we've seen really kind of leading the Knights and into action. So it's been really inspiring to see how many guys from Las Cruces have kind of risen to that call. Thanks, Dan.
So what's the role of men in the battle against abortion? Do men play a significant role, or are they irrelevant? Are they kind of a postscript? They kind of a PS?
Right.
What would you say? What do you say?
Right. So that's one of the reasons that I really felt called to get more involved and do more. Was because as I first got out on the sidewalk and started seeing that, contrary to the conventional wisdom and the narrative that they put out there, that they say, oh, this is a bunch of men, the pro-life movement's a bunch of men trying to control women and tell them what to do with their bodies. And, I was actually very nervous to go out to the sidewalk if I didn't have, a woman friend with me to kind of as a security blanket, right? To say like, oh, look, I'm not just some guy out here. But really what I started realizing was that, I would say 75% of the pro-life movement, pro-life leaders, pro-life effort are all women. And you look at a lot of the big pro-life movements right now, and, women are having to step up and fill this void because men are being told, no, don't speak out on this issue. And those women that are speaking up are post-abortive. Usually they're women who've been harmed by this, and they want to help prevent other women from making the same mistake. And so they're stepping up into taking these leadership roles because we are failing them. And when I was on the sidewalk, I started realizing, there are women crying and there are children dying, but the men are all, we're watching the game. We're failing to step into our God-given responsibility of protecting and defending women and children. And I mean, it says in James, in the book of James 1:27, it says, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being corrupted by the world. So it's integral to part of our faith. Part of our religion is to help widows and orphans. And in today's world, in our modern culture, widows and orphans aren't the same as they were back in biblical times when, a widow couldn't provide for herself and would become, it's a little different now. But really, I think the crisis is what I would call spiritual widows and spiritual orphans, that women are being used and abused by men, and they're being left and abandoned. And so you have essentially spiritual widows who, and then you have these fatherless children, these spiritual orphans who are being just led into the slaughterhouse. A lot of times it's men who our crazy secular culture has said that now the gentlemanly thing to do is, well, I'll pay for the abortion, right? And then they use and abuse the women over and over again and then leave her. And so this is a fault of men. The whole abortion crisis is the fault of men. It was 9 men on the Supreme Court who imposed this violence of abortion upon women. It was men who worked to invent the contraceptives that have been the gateway to abortion, that have continued to allow men to treat women like objects and use them. I mean, it is constantly, in fact, the early feminist movement actually protested and opposed birth control, actually saying that, women don't cost anything as lab rats, but, and they feed themselves and they clean their own cages and they pay for the doctor. And they said that we will not tolerate intimidation by these white coated gods who are men antiseptically directing the lives of women. And so they consciously, Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who was one of the an abortionist who later converted to the faith, He helped found NARAL and helped impose abortion on the nation. And he actually said it was a conscious strategic decision on their part to win over the feminists who opposed abortion and contraception, who saw this as a way for men to use them. And he said, we have to win the feminists and get them to buy into this and get them to champion it if we're ever going to get anywhere. And they did. And now that's their rallying cry. And they're the ones that have taken the fight on. So we need men to step up and say, you know what, even if we're going against the grain in our secular culture, we have to step up and defend women and children. And that, I mean, that is what, for especially any men who are listening who are part of the Knights of Columbus, I remember being blown away when I realized that the Knights of Columbus is not an organization for men. It's actually the largest charitable organization for women and children. Because when Father McGivney started it in the first place, it was because all the Catholic immigrants coming into the Americas at the time, because of the discrimination, they could only get high-risk jobs like firefighters and police and miners and things where they might not come home at the end of the day. And when they lost their lives on the job, you would have a widow with children left behind. And so the state, the Puritan state, would come in and take the children away from her and put them with non-Catholic families so that they would lose their faith. And so Father McGivney he was being overwhelmed with all these widows he was trying to support coming to his parish. And so he said, we need to start a fraternity of brothers, of men, who when a brother knight falls, the brother men will be there to support the women and the children who are left behind so that they can make it. And that this man's legacy and his family aren't torn apart after his death. And that's still to this day what the Knights of Columbus does. And that's a legacy I didn't know. A lot of people don't know. So we need Knights of Columbus to say, we're going to fulfill on Father McGivney's vision and stand up to protect and defend women and children.
Amen. Dan, you got a question for Mark?
Yeah, Mark and I were talking about this a little earlier, but I wanted him to flesh it out. Last week on last week's show, we showed an infomercial on making connections between child sacrifices and barbaric cultures of the past, whether it was Aztec or some of the biblical cultures pre-Christ. And then a video by Curtis Boyd. So it didn't seem like all this is just some crazy right-wing weird stuff. Dr. Curtis Boyd, late-term abortionist, got clinics all over Texas and New Mexico, partial birth abortionist. There's a video he recorded that he says, yeah, I know that I'm killing babies, but I'm offering their souls to heaven as a Baptist minister. Now he's a former Baptist minister. He's some other Unitarian or something now. Mark, when did you first discover the diabolic nature of the evil of abortion? And how does that tie in to you know, what you had quoted Dr. Peter Kreeft from Boston College. When did you first notice this, and when did you first make the connection between the deeper spiritual evils behind it, and not just the euphemisms of choice and women's empowerment, et cetera?
Right. Yeah, honestly, it's been a journey. It's little by little. It's like this onion I described that, you know, like everyone kind of knows abortion is wrong, it's bad and something. But as you peel back the layers, it just gets worse and worse and worse until you see at its core, it's really exactly that. I mean, this is Dr. Peter Kreeft, the quote, he says that abortion is the Antichrist's demonic parody of the Eucharist. And that is why it actually uses the same holy words of Christ when they use as their anthem and their rally cry, this is my body. These are the words of Christ from the Last Supper when he says, this is my body. He's selflessly giving himself as the innocent on behalf of the sins of another person. Abortion flips that on its head and it says, I'm the sinner and I'm gonna sacrifice the innocent victim against their will, the baby against their will, to cover up my sins or so that I can have a better life. And they use the words of Christ when they say, this is my body. This is my choice. And so, and that's what he said. It's this blasphemous opposite meaning of Christ. And so that was kind of the, when I had this like epiphany, like, oh my gosh, this is something so much more than I ever thought. It's not just killing babies. This is literally demonic. This is the devil's sacrament and he's going to do everything at all costs to protect it. And so we've had local incidences where, you know, you're out there and you see people drive by and cursing and giving, you know, flashing the devil's symbol with their hand. In El Paso, there was some really dark stuff going on at that abortion facility that just closed. And I remember one time somebody had been bringing stuff in and out of the abortion center and then left in a truck and rolled down their window and they held up a book and they were shouting all this satanic stuff and they had a book with a pentagram on it and they're shouting at our prayer volunteers who are kneeling there in prayer. And then, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's come to light recently. Zachary King was a big Satanist who had a conversion and he exposed a lot that has been going on that where, you know, they actually in this church of Satan, they actually have, they have to consciously and intentionally break the Ten Commandments. And so to break thou shalt not kill, they'll actually, you know, impregnate women in these covens and then do abortions on them. And I mean, I don't even want to repeat, it gets worse than that, some of the stuff that he's revealed. But you know, some of those, some people have actually become abortionists, or they'll be behind abortion clinics in the alleys doing these rituals. In fact, just a few months ago, they actually, now the Satanic Temple has actually admitted this. This isn't some conspiracy theory, it sounds like it is, but they've actually gone on the record saying that they want to use this as a religious ritual in order to protect it from laws, saying that that this satanic abortion ritual is their religious freedom. And so that like state laws that do waiting periods or make sure that women have a fully informed information, you know, by saying you need to read this information before having an abortion or listen to the fetal heartbeat, they're saying that that violates their abortion as a religious right to them. And they actually compare it to say, they actually say this quote, that it would be unconstitutional to require waiting periods before receiving Holy Communion, or it would be illegal to demand Muslims to seek counseling before Ramadan or something. So all these laws infringe our religious right to abortion. This is what, so they're going on the record saying this is religious for us. This is a sacrament for us. Okay, so this is, I mean, it doesn't get any more clear cut than that.
Mark, a couple of words of inspiration before we wrap it up. How can people support your work? How can they help you? And if you want to give us just a few words of inspiration, give us about a minute and tell us, give us our marching orders for every Catholic Christian out there. You got 1 minute. Go.
I appreciate it. So if you want to learn more about us, you can go to our website at southwest.life. That's southwest.life. We got a big video. We just had a recent fundraising banquet with Sister Dee Dee Byrne, who was the sister from our Little Workers of the Sacred Heart, who spoke over the summer at the RNC nationally. And just reminding us that we're not just pro-life, we're pro-eternal life. And so don't let yourself get fooled into thinking that, you know, if you just go in, and yes, we do have a civic duty, you know, as a citizen to go and vote pro-life and do that, that's super important. But don't for a minute think that that will suffice. You know, when we get to the pearly gates, God's not going to say, you know, oh, did you vote for a pro-life candidate? He say, what did you do to help moms? What did you do to end abortion? And so while that is important, that's like the last thing on the list of things that we have to do as Catholics. So get out there, pray in front of the abortion clinics, learn more. You can reach out to us. We've helped other cities start coalitions for life as well to have a full-time year-round presence and do this full-time. And that's what shuts these places down, is you and your witness.
Thank you very much, Mark Cavalier, Executive Director, Southwest Coalition for Life. Thanks, Dan, for introducing me to him. Got some good men out there in New Mexico. Keep up the good work. Up next, Gary Machuda, Hands-On Apologetics from the Midwest Command Center. The three soldiers for Christ, we're signing out. We're 10-7, out of service. God bless you. Keep the faith. And remember, set yourself apart from this corrupt generation. Be saints. You weren't made to fit in. God bless you.